Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. My guest has been studying generational differences since her doctoral work at the age of 22. And she has taken a look, of course, at baby boomers and Generation X and millennials, and now a new cohort being described as iGeners. And let me tell you what she's discovered and what I found so compelling about her work. She said that in all of her analyses of generational data, some of it going all the way back to the 1930s, she's never seen anything like she's seeing now. Around 2012, she started seeing large, abrupt shifts in teens' behavior and emotional states. And she talks about looking at the line graphs. Now they're looking like steep mountains, rapid drop-offs. And I wanted to pursue this with her because she not only does a very broad look at teen behavior, but she also has a chapter dealing with concerns about religion, faith, spirituality. And let me say, Dr. Jean Twenge is professor of psychology at San Diego State University. She's the author of more than 120 scientific publications and two books based on her research, Generation Me and the Narcissism Epidemic. And this newest book is called iGen, Why Today's Super Connected Kids Are Growing Up Less Rebellious, More Tolerant, Less Happy, and Completely Unprepared for Adulthood. Dr. Twenge, thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
Well, this, again, I thought your basic thesis here is compelling. This first of all, let's talk about the discovery of this new generation marker. I always wonder, is this like astrology? You know, I mean, do our definitions for baby boomers and Generation X and millennials, do they all are basically the same thing, only with different emphases depending on the generation?
Yeah, it's a fair question because the generational cutoffs are often arbitrary. You know, we need to group people into generations. And even though there's not that much argument over the existence of differences based on when you're born, where exactly you draw that line is, of course, up for debate. I think it's particularly true for the distinctions between boomers, Gen Xers, and millennials. The beginning of the boomer generation is pretty definite. But that is really what was so surprising in these trends that I saw for iGen, that for the first time in really decades, there was a pronounced generational break that was showing up and these very large national surveys of teens that I analyzed for my research.
And what were the difference in attitudes, and what were some of the most pronounced differences in attitudes or behaviors?
Yeah, well, right around 2011 or 2012, more teens started to say that they felt like they couldn't do anything right, or that they felt like they felt useless. And these are classic symptoms of depression. More started to say that they felt lonely, that they felt left out, and just really sudden increases in those. And then at the same time, there started to be really pronounced declines in the amount of time teens said they were spending with their friends face-to-face. So things like getting together with their friends informally, or going to the mall, or going to parties. There's a really big drop-off in the amount of time teens spent on those types of activities around that same time, around after 2010.
Wow. And there's something ironic about this. I mean, this is the era of social media, right? So isn't everybody supposed to be connected with everybody else, and yet they're feeling disconnected?
Yeah, that's the interesting thing. And that, you know, social media companies tell us that that's why we should be on their platforms, is to stay connected to others.
Yeah.
And for a while, that was an argument people were making about teens being on social media so often, is, oh, they're communicating with their friends. That's what teens have always done. They've communicated with their friends and hung out with their friends. But that assumes that being on social media or texting with your friends is the same as communicating with them when you're in person, when you're hanging out together. And it's not the same. It doesn't fulfill people as much emotionally or really help them feel like they fit in and that they're less lonely. It just doesn't have the same effect on mental health as being together with people face-to-face does.
Yeah. So, I mean, physical proximity is meaningful.
Well, it's just all the things, and I interviewed teens about this as well as looking at the big surveys. It's all the things you can do in person. You know, you can actually do things together instead of just comment on things that you've already done.
Mm-hmm.
There's not as much pressure for evaluation as there is on social media. Teens told me things that make perfect sense. Well, when you're with someone in person, you can look at the expression on their face.
Yeah.
You can give them a hug. You can have a real-time conversation. Those are all things you can't do online.
Yeah. That's interesting because facial expressions, vocal inflections really do allow conversations to have much more subtlety than simply texting or tweeting. So they're missing those subtleties.
You don't have to wait for someone's response. And I think that may be one of the keys to why it's better for mental health because, I mean, even as an adult, when you send a text or post something to social media, you're waiting for a response and you're waiting for the likes to come in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very anxiety-provoking for a lot of people. And especially think about being a 12 or 13-year-old where you're already very anxious about how other people see you. And that's different from face-to-face. Even if you're having a negative interaction face-to-face, at least it happens right away and you're not waiting for it on tenterhooks.
Yeah. No, that's a good, excellent point. Does this having to wait, is that a period? So that period of waiting is filled with anxiety about how others are going to respond to what I just said. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Okay. Does that become pathological at some point?
It can cross over into addiction, or at least behavior and emotions that look a lot like addiction. So there are other researchers who have looked at this, that when we get, say, the likes on a social media post, that it involves the same brain chemicals and brain regions as other types of addictions. We get a little squirt of dopamine, and you want to keep coming back for that. So it becomes addictive, and I think that's particularly true when it's on the phone, which is so portable and can be taken into the bedroom and taken out when you go out of the house, and it's always with you. That temptation is always there.
Yeah, yeah. This sense that they can't do anything right, that would indicate to me that there's some, they have extravagant expectations, perhaps, of what they're supposed to be. Tell me, how do you explain this widespread sense that they don't measure up or they can't do anything right?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things going on. So part of it could be some direct effects of social media. So, for example, there's a research paper that's titled Seeing Everyone Else's Highlight Reels, and it's about Facebook and depression and how when we're always comparing ourselves to other people's lives on Facebook, we feel like we don't measure up. Partially because even if other people's lives are just as boring as ours, they're only highlighting the good things.
Right, right.
There's also lots of indirect effects. So the fact that teenagers are more likely to say, I feel like I can't do anything right, is just part, it's one small part of a much larger picture of breakdowns in mental health. So those are symptoms of depression. There's also been a huge increase in the percentage of teens who fit the criteria for clinical level depression. So that's depression that really needs to be treated because it's severe enough. There's also been big increases in anxiety, in factors related to suicide, like suicide attempts and thinking about suicide, in self-harm and self-injury. So the CDC just a couple weeks ago put out a new study about emergency room visits for things like cutting and taking too many pills.
Yeah.
Almost tripled among young teen girls. And then the actual suicide rate among teens has also spiked right around the same time after about 2010.
This is terrible. I mean,
it is.
Good
it is.
Heavens.
And I think we need to pay really close attention to this. This is very serious. This isn't, you know, you can see these symptoms starting out with these feelings of, you know, I can't do anything right and I feel useless. And those are bad enough.
Yeah.
But it's now getting to the level of actual physical harm, including the increase in the suicide rate, which thankfully that's still very rare. That's still a very, very small number. But frankly, even one is too many.
Yeah. What distinguishes, what is the most clear distinction between millennials and iGens? Is it the smartphone?
Well, it appears to be. So these, as I mentioned, these changes start to show up around 2011 or 2012. 2012 happens to be the year when the percentage of Americans with a smartphone crossed 50%.
Okay.
So that's the time when smartphones went from something a minority of people had to the majority of people. That's when they really became ubiquitous. You know, probably everybody has at least one memory of around that time. You go to a public place and everybody's looking at the phone, and that
right.
didn't used to be the case. So that's where the break seems to happen, is around that time. So that traces back, since we're looking at samples of teens, to those born 1995 and later being iGens versus millennials.
Okay. My guest is Dr. Gene Twenge. The book is called iGen: Why Today's Superconnected Kids Are Growing Up Less Rebellious and More Tolerant, Less Happy, and Completely Unprepared for Adulthood. We're going to continue on the other side of the break, and I want to explore again difference in attitudes towards spirituality, faith in God, prayer, and religion, to see how this fits in to the larger description of this new generation. I'm Al Cresta. Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. With me is Dr. Gene Twenge, the author of iGen: Why Today's Superconnected Kids Are Growing Up Less Rebellious, More Tolerant, Less Happy, and Completely Unprepared for Adulthood. Again, the spelling is I-G-E-N, because this is something you're going to want to pick up and read. I wanted to talk, Dr. Twenge, about attitudes towards spirituality and religion. And you quote a man from Columbus, Ohio, Brian Scheller, from the New York Times website. In the 21st century, it has become clear that ancient religious texts are simply the creation of human beings. To believe otherwise is to define delusion. Anything offered by religion can be found by another, less deluded manner of belief or behavior. Now, those attitudes have been around for a while, but they've been considered kind of disrespectful and somewhat marginal. These attitudes are becoming more central?
They are. So you're right. There have been people who have questioned religion in that way for a long time, but they used to be a very small minority.
Yeah.
Now, especially with iGen and millennials, it's a much larger percentage. Probably wouldn't all express themselves in that way, which is, you know, bordering on disrespectful. But
sure.
They do say on surveys that they don't have a religious affiliation, that they don't attend religious services. And just in the last 5 to 7 years, there's also been a pronounced increase in the percentage of young people who say they don't believe in God and never pray.
Hmm.
And that's unusual, because it used to be the standard thinking about the decline in religious practice and belief was that public practice, like going to services, yeah, that was on the decline, but that people's practice at home and their beliefs hadn't changed. And that's no longer true for these youngest generations of iGen and the millennials. It's about one out of four who say they never pray and do not believe in God.
Wow. It used to be that it was common to say, well, people are less religiously affiliated today. They're not identifying with particular denominations or labels, but they remain, quote, spiritual. In other words, they still pray. They still believe in God of some sort. And you're saying that's changing now. They're both non-religious and non-spiritual.
Right, right. And there's also on these surveys, there are a few questions that specifically ask about spirituality, because that's often the other response is, oh, maybe people aren't religious. They may say that they're spiritual.
Right.
But for these younger generations, that's not true either. Spirituality has not grown to replace religion. In one major survey, the percentage you say that they're spiritual among young people has stayed about the same as the percentage you say that they're religious has plummeted. And then in another survey of entering college students, fewer say that they think that they are more spiritual than the average person. That's actually declined.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty much all of these kind of counter explanations, oh, they're still religious at home, that doesn't seem to be true anymore, at least for the younger generations. Same with the idea that spirituality has replaced religion. That also does not appear to be true.
Why do you think that's the case? I mean, one could argue there was the rise of the new atheism after 9/11. One could argue that breakdown in families means there's less ability to transfer faith from generation to generation. What do you think?
Well, in the paper where my co-authors and I looked at this, I teamed up with two people who look at psychology and religion in their research. And the pattern that seemed to fit the best was that this decline in religion maps onto an overall increase in American culture in individualism.
Okay.
So that's a cultural system that places more focus on the self and less on social rules and other people. And at base, a lot of religion is about other people, and a lot of it is about following certain social rules. And it's about something larger than yourself. And that isn't a good fit with a culture that instead says, if it feels good, do it.
Yeah, yeah. No, that makes sense. And again, it seems to be almost assumed that religious practice has a communal dimension to it. And if your communal dimension breaks down, then it's got to be more difficult to transmit the faith, right?
Yeah, so that's certainly part of it. You mentioned, you know, family breakdown, that could be playing a role. But even, you know, among these young people who are in intact families, more say that their parents themselves aren't religious, so their parents aren't, you know, passing it down. So that's been the other shift. Because there's really two things going on with young people. Is first, as they get older, as they become adolescents and then young adults, fewer are religious through that developmental process, going from childhood to adolescence to young adulthood. And also, there's less transmission of religious tradition from parents to children.
So, less religion, more insecurity. You write about they're growing up more slowly.
Mm-hmm.
And is this largely to be attributed, though, to just use of the cell phone or smartphones?
No, it's much deeper than that.
Yeah.
So some of these trends in, say, mental health really accelerated around 2011 or 2012. Same thing with those trends away from spending time with friends in person. So those are more closely tied to the smartphone. But the trend away from religion has been going on for longer. It traces back really to the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And very similar for this trend in growing up slowly, which is that, for example, high school seniors are much less likely to have their driver's license, work at a paid job, go out without their parents, date, drink alcohol, and have sex, which, of course, some of those are good things. As a parent, you know, I can identify with that. But if you look at just good and bad, you kind of miss the big picture, which is it's not just you know, that they're not doing these things they're not supposed to do. They're also doing not doing some things that they probably should be doing,
right? Right.
Like going out and working at a job and having their driver's license. So that's part of a bigger cultural shift in which we have fewer kids and nurture them more carefully and expect that it's going to take longer for them to become independent adults.
Yeah.
So those trends have been going on for longer, and the same with the trend in religion and toward more individualism. So smartphones may have something to do with those, you know, in the last 5 to 7 years,
yeah.
But they began before the age of the smartphone.
So the thing to look for then would be the growth in individualism, this emphasis upon, you know, myself as a independent creature who needs to know myself before I can afford to risk relationships.
Mm-hmm. That's such an interesting cultural idea.
Yeah.
That is now what's accepted and almost taken for granted, that you have to work on yourself first and make sure that everything is all settled before you get into a relationship, when in previous generations the idea was that you would meet a partner and work on getting better together.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, in my own case, that's definitely the way I approached relationships in my early 20s. I figured I needed to learn how to love. So marriage became something that would help me become more of who I wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
If I had waited until I had it together, I'm not sure I would have ever gotten married.
And that's pretty much what is happening with a lot of young people today, that the marriage rate has fallen, and those who do get married much later.
This emphasis on individualism is interesting, and especially as it deals with this idea of more inclusiveness and toleration. So there's certainly much more acceptance of gender priorities and LGBT issues and race issues. Mm-hmm. How does that concern for inclusion of others in, quote, our group, how does that comport with this increased emphasis on individualism?
It actually fits right in. So if you look around the world, cultures that are individualistic are also the ones that place more emphasis on equality across groups. And those who are less individualistic, more collectivistic, tend to be more traditional in the way that they view groups in terms of, say, gender, LGBT, race, and ethnicity, and so on. So that's what shows up in terms of cultural change as well, that as the cultures become more individualistic, when you treat people as individuals rather than members of groups, the result usually is more tolerance and more equality. And iGen in particular is very individualistic in that way. They place a lot of emphasis on equality and tolerance. And where they particularly stand out from previous generations is their attitudes around LGBT issues.
Right, right. Yeah, I've noticed that. And that's interesting because it sounds as though that is done simply on the grounds of that person is an individual and these are his preferences, and who am I to have any judgment whatsoever on those, because he's an individual to be treated as an individual. So we don't even discuss definitions of abstract definitions of marriage. It's simply enough to say he's an individual and he should have the freedom to express himself in these sexual areas as he sees fit. And we don't even have to discuss questions of how does that impact larger definitions of marriage.
So the way iGen sees it, the way a lot of young people put it when they talk about these issues, is I think they'll say, I think people need to be who they are.
Yeah.
And so it is Yes, it's centered on individual identity. It's also centered on equality, and that's the other lens through which they view it, is the idea of equal rights for everyone.
Yeah. Do they also equal rights? Perfectly, I understand. Do they also think in terms of equal abilities or equal talents? In other words, does everybody always win?
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's something that really shaped the millennials and has shaped iGen to an extent as well, is the idea that we're all winners. So the way it's often put in terms of millennials is everybody gets a trophy.
Yeah.
That, you know, in children's sports leagues, just for showing up, that you get a trophy, and that everyone is special, which isn't exactly what the word means.
Yeah. Well, we're unfortunately, Dr. Twenge, we're out of time. Thank you so much. This is an exceptional study, and I hope we can talk again.